The meaning of dandelions. From The Secret Language of Plants. By Andrina. Read by Sam Gabriel. Based on the works of J.K. Rowling. Chapter 6. The Beginning of the War. Severus didn't respond to the Dark Lord's call until a week later, when the mark burned again. Even then it took him some time to prepare. Severus took every memory he had of Harry and locked it carefully in a pensieve. He could convince and manipulate, and he could hide his thoughts. But if Voldemort wasn't inclined to listening to his excuses for his absence, Severus just couldn't risk giving up that, nor under torture or legitimacy. Severus apparated to Voldemort's den, not knowing if he would get out alive. He needn't have worried, as it turned out. Voldemort was happy to see him, and every single one of Severus's actions was received with approval. Severus knelt before him, with no hint of fear or doubt in his perfectly even tone. Remus, however, would have known that he wasn't sincere. He said he had waited for his return in a position where he hoped he could be useful, and the Dark Lord smiled a smile of crooked and pointy teeth. Severus had arrived a week later, and yet he had already garnered the Lord's favor. The most terrifying aspect of Voldemort wasn't his inhuman visage or his unholy quest to conquer death. The monster's worst weapon was that he was the most powerful legilimens anyone remembered. He was so powerful he could often catch intentions without needing to cast the spell. Merely being in his presence was enough for him to smell your lies and get a taste of your secrets. There was no way to disguise your fear from him. And if he turned his full attention and his wands to you, he would seize complete control of your mind. He would take you, conquer you, claim you, rape you, leave nothing of yourself to call your own. He would make you know what it means to belong, to be owned, to not be. Severus knew this well. He did not. This was a secret. When he heard about the prophecy, before he knew exactly what it meant and to whom it referred, even then he wanted to be quiet. He did not want to reveal it. This was the secret. But Voldemort had sensed the idea in Severus's mind. Once that happened, there was only speaking fast and clear before the Dark Lord decided you were less than absolutely committed to the cause. It had been the days of his height of power, and he could afford to kill followers to make examples out of them. He sensed that Severus had learned something important. And so Severus spoke, while Voldemort dug his claws deep in Severus's mind. He only just managed to disguise his hesitance to speak as fear for his beloved lord, rather than the relief he had initially experienced when he heard the prophecy. This is what saved Severus's life. He hadn't known what it meant in any case. He thought that approaches meant there was a foreign wizard coming to England. He had thought it would be an adult, not a baby, not lilies. He wouldn't have given it up so easily had he understood. That Severus managed to fool him now was a marvel, but then again, as much as Voldemort was a great legitimate, Severus was just better. He had learned to be, not because he was a skilled occlumens, and oh, how he was, but because he did not rely exclusively on his magical ability to shadow his thoughts, not any more. The best way to fight a legilimens isn't to erect a magical barrier, but to present them with an open garden, and just a few dark corners with little secrets and shames. Make sure they don't want to read your mind in the first place. Let them think they already know everything about you. Don't let them wonder. Questions bring death. Just as Severus now wondered about the actions of some of his fellow Death Eaters, their vagueness and unusual repetition in the description of the return of Voldemort, a certain tendency to utter the exact same phrases. Severus couldn't believe that Goyle Sr. could come up with something as complex as, "'Twas with astonished joy that we saw him rise, and with devoted hearts we, as one, saluted him on bended knee and presented him with our allegiance, hearts, and wands.' Goyle Sr. still laughed at fart jokes. It could be something that Lucius would say, and maybe Goyle would try to repeat, but Severus seriously doubted his ability to retain so many words. Over the next few days, because of course he didn't dare do this in Voldemort's proximity, Severus planted the thought that they ought to celebrate. Goyle, blessed fool that he was, suggested it, and Lucius took the idea and ran with it, and so a few of them ended up at the lounge for a night of alcohol and debauchery. With their attentions fixed on their glasses or the multiple shaking body parts of the entertainers, it was easy to dive into their minds. They all had the exact same story. Word for word, the memory was from the same visual angle. There was a conspicuous absence of Harry, all the attention focused on Voldemort's rebirth. Something had happened, something that Harry hadn't mentioned, something so big it made Voldemort obliviate his followers and implant a new, Harry-less memory. Severus knew that Harry had come to trust people less and less, to be cautious and jealous of his secrets. He understood his silence, and he approved of it, even if he wished they had had a chance to talk. He doubted they would get one any time soon. But more important, whatever it was that Harry didn't say, Voldemort was ashamed of it. He was scared. Attaboy. Dumbledore called for the old order, and Severus now found himself in the exhausting position not of a double but a triple spy with a day job. He had to attend to a murderous Dark Lord with recently developed performance issues. Any false movement would trigger not only Severus's torment and death, but that of many others. He had the ice-cold, manipulative yet benevolent wizard and his followers to keep informed and prepared for the approaching war. They relied on Severus's information to save lives. He had a child he loved and had sworn to protect. He had a man who haunted his thoughts and filled him with worry and jealousy and a deep ache in his belly. He could barely afford to think of either of them, and he could not let them show in his mind or in his face, even while he worked to protect them. It was torment. And at some point, he was supposed to revise the school curriculum and choose new prefects and head boy and girl. If he weren't so sure that the poor boy would pay for it dearly, Severus would appoint someone other than Draco to be the fifth-year prefect, just to snub Lucius. At least he had Cersei Subada. She was the obvious head girl choice. Severus woke on a Saturday night with a thought in his mind, a clear, sharp thought. He left his bed, lonely and cold as it was, and went to rummage through his personal library. He put on a dressing gown to fight the night chill, gray and gold with an intricate geometrical pattern, a present from Remus, just as those gloves he still had, and the soft, warm slippers Severus refused to replace, because it was impossible to find anything so comfortable. All of Remus's gifts went towards the warm and comfortable, perhaps because he had experienced much coldness during his life. Severus spent hours shifting through his personal collection of magical review until he found the article he had dreamt about. February of 5 years ago. There was also a small piece by Remus on hags, and Severus read it because those were his words. But that was not what he was looking for. It was a paper on old curses and folklore, which was as good as saying nothing because that was what magical review ran on, half practical advice and half nostalgic provisions of the old magic. Magic that was mostly ineffective nowadays. Current spells and potions were quicker and stronger. There was no comparison between them and the magic featured in the magazine, slow and tiring, with dozens of steps and ingredients and foreign words all to achieve little, nothing flashy. And that was the thing with magic these days, and the last few hundred years. It had to be immediate. This would not be immediate. It would take time, at least a year and then 6 more months. It would be a lot of work. There were over 7,000 cultivars of apples, and Severus had to find the right one. Of course, he could use a sleeping draught. It would achieve the same purpose, except for how it would not. Sometimes you can replicate things quickly, and sometimes there is an essential difference in a work that takes time. Severus wanted that essence. End of chapter 6. For the full text of this and other stories by the same author, visit the AO3 and Tumblr pages of Endrina. First pass editing by Ohana. Music by Sean Johnson. Special thanks to Sakiko. If you would like me to record a story, voiceover, or character, please get in touch with me using the contact information found on my website, which is located at samgabrielvo.com. There you can also find all the other stories that I've read, as well as links to my Discord server, where I record things live for your enjoyment. And finally, as always, thank you for listening.